Talk given Friday, 5th December 1975. The context of religion, in its profoundest sense, is transcendence. It is synonymous with creative action, with creative power. And as such, it is the source of all energy, not only energy as we understand it in scientific terms, but energy in every sense of the word, mental energy, spiritual energy, known energy, unknown energy. Now this is the real context of religion. And since the creative process is eternally at work, manifest to us as spread through time, but in actual fact functioning in eternity, of which we are not normally conscious. Because of that, each one of us is a center of energies, of this fundamental creative energy which manifests itself in several main ways. We can become aware, we can be sensitive to and respond to some of these main ways. And we give these different ways different names. They don't matter very much, the names. What matters is that we should awaken to this fact that we are centers of such energy all the time. The total universal process is an energy process. Now, if that is the case, then what is it in us which obstructs this process? Because insofar as we obstruct the process, we are irreligious. Because this creative action in eternity, the transcendent reality, is all the time creating. Whatsoever interferes with that creative process is a flaw, a fault, an ill. We are, the whole human race is, in some degree or other, in the ill state. We experience it and cognize it as suffering, as fear, anxiety, anger, violence, and all the ill things. We also experience it as all what we call the good things. Now this needs a little careful examination. It's quite simple, really. what we, in our mode of awareness, which is the mode of duality, what we call the good things, which are merely the opposite of what we call the bad things, are all self-oriented. When we love, we are conscious in terms of I love. When we are kindly, when we are generous, when we are faithful, forbearing, patient, noble, and all the rest of it, it is always I am patient, I am forbearing. But obviously, this sort of consciousness, confined to the ambivalent state, necessarily holds within itself its opposite, with which it will be in conflict. Psychologists in the world today, in the ordinary way, are very much aware of this ambivalence in our human nature, as it is called. Most of them bend their energies towards helping a person to come to terms with what is called the shadow self, or the dark side of his nature. Now, life in its reality never comes to terms. Life is creative, and whatsoever is creation is always perfect, complete. It is whole. In a coming to terms, what happens is that the two opposites are brought into a state of an uneasy truce. That is not what life does. When we human beings deliberately try to square up one with the other, we are indulging in a mechanical operation which has no life in it, and it does not work, because that which is mechanically synthesized is a wholly unfit medium through which life, this mysterious, wonderful thing called life, can function. We have to realize the state of integration. Now, I said we have to realize. Its actual meaning is that the totality, the universal creative process, if unobstructed, will release the state of integration in us, which means that the limitations of and our bondage to the opposite duals in our ambivalent mode of awareness are completely transcended, and therefore there is a whole psyche, a whole mind, not a mind whose conflicting fragments have been screwed together by intellect. Now, this is something of fundamental importance for us to realize, to see clearly, that means. Insofar as we can see it deeply, not merely superficially, you can see clearly superficially and give a perfect shape to it outwardly, but inside the works don't go. They are not right. They are unalive. But when one does see anything really completely and clearly, anything of the nature of a problem in relation to it never exists for you. So you see, our responsibility consists not in solving our problems, but in seeing the truth, the whole truth of what actually is there. And the seeing of this truth in the whole sense is immensely greater than the intellectual analytical perception of what we are looking at. When and as we do this, and we arrive at the stage where spontaneously and naturally it just goes on, as spontaneously and naturally as when we use our physical eyes, as we walk in the street, we see different objects in the street, and it all happens quite, there's no effort involved in it, we just see it. When it happens like that, then there is no obstruction from the individual to the great creative process. In other words, as it is put in, I think it is in Christian terms, man and God are reconciled. But you see, this reconciliation between man and God is never really understood by us, because we haven't seen the whole truth of what is implied in that statement. We think of it in terms after the fashion of coming to terms with difficulties and so forth, making sacrifices, sacrificing ourselves for the sake of God, for the glory of God and all that. All this intellectual humbug which comes into play, you see. I am, oh, a servant of God, such a noble fellow, a good fellow, and the good God will reward me, of course, afterwards. One must be able to laugh at oneself over all this. These are the tricks the intellect plays. And the intellect cannot help playing such tricks, simply because being the servant, the slave of our desires and our passions and our whims and fancies and so on, it simply works towards giving us that which in actual fact divides us, separates us from real happiness, real fulfillment, and from a real vision of reality, of truth, of God, of transcendence. Use any word you like. So, we have to see clearly. And remember, just as the eye sees effortlessly, because it's the natural function of the eye to see, so the mind must see clearly. Now, what is the meaning of the mind seeing clearly? You know, I have said time and again, mind may be regarded as the receptive, responsive sensitivity which characterizes the living human organism. Here is a living creature belonging to the species called man. And as such, he has this extraordinary sensitivity, because of which he becomes aware of that which is outside him, beyond him, to a degree that no other animal, no other creature on earth is aware. And in addition to that, he has this very remarkable ability of creating a world within himself, out of his own brain, out of his own mind. And this world which he raises up is not purely a fictitious world. It is a world which has relationship with reality, for the very simple reason that out of the activity of his imagination, coupled with perception and knowledge and so forth, he can produce concrete results. Insofar as he cannot produce any concrete results, this play of the imagination and so on is fictitious, it's illusory, and it misleads him often. But this sensitivity, if allowed to function, purely and fully, awakens the living person in such a manner that he is in complete harmony with what we call, what each one of us calls the not-self, which is the totality. Here is one infinitesimal fragment of totality, capable of consciousness of his own withinness. This infinitesimal fragment has this extraordinary sensitivity, which, if allowed to function perfectly, puts him in touch with the immensity of the totality. Now, this is something very remarkable and very marvelous. Only insofar as we are fully subsumed and awake in that totality, we are religious, because when we are awake in that manner, there is nothing of the nature of my desire, my will, my perception, my action, or anything taking place. It is the totality functioning freely through the self-conscious individual, who is capable of shutting himself out from totality and saying, this is mine. Now you see, when one understands the nature, the true nature, therefore, of selflessness, of egoless being, of unegoistic egohood, then we are religious. And this is the state of the complete reconciliation between man and God. But this is the state of complete harmony with God, of complete union with God. And this state of harmony is not a static condition. It's not a merely passive condition. It is a creative, active condition in which there is no intrusion of an I consciousness on the part of the particular living individual upon the omniscience, the omnipotence, the omnipresence of the one total reality. And this is the liberated state, is it not? It is the happy state. Now there are no bondages anywhere. This is spiritual freedom in the supreme sense of the word, as far as I can express it in words. This is not something which we must set before ourselves as a goal to be achieved. Because the moment we do that, it has become restricted to one's personality. I have a goal. The totality has no goal. How can it have a goal? It is, that's all. It is free of the limitations imposed by minds which think in terms of limitation, particularity, finitude. Therefore, minds which are confined within the sphere of mortality, of death. So now, this reconciling between man and God. I'm using these terms because this is our last meeting before Christmas. This reconciling between man and God. Remember the words of Jesus, "No man cometh unto the Father except through me." Can it be said that what he meant was that no man realizes the supreme good except through this particular Jewish rabbi called Jesus? Not at all. This rabbi Jesus, when he says me, when he says I, does he mean me or I in the same sense as I, an ordinary mortal, use those terms? For the perfected Holy One, there is no longer me. There is no longer I. In this self-contained and limited to the self-containment sense in which we say I and me. I am no more. There is no me at all. And this is a very real, complete, living awareness, in terms of which that particular separate organism named Jesus, or named some this, that, or the other, functions. Now, the one who has grown into this state is termed the Son. This is the Son of God, if you like. This is the meaning of the Son. Just as we have the sons of the prophets throughout the Old Testament, we have that same term son used in the Brahmanical and Hindu teachings and in the Buddhist teachings. The Buddha says of Sariputta, one of his great disciples, "He is the son of my mouth," and so forth. You see? This is the Son. And the astonishing thing is that this is the Father embodied in limitation. The human body named Jesus, or named whoever the Holy One is. So the Father-Son relationship actually stands for this remarkable, mysterious phenomenon of totality, wholly embodied in the finite particular. The immortal, immeasurable, manifesting through that which is mortal, measurable, limited. Because the mortal, measurable, limited is an expression of that totality which has come to full fruition as a man, a human being, not a subhuman creature. And therefore, no man cometh to the Father excepting through me. Me used in this sense, the Son. But this means that you and I have to awaken completely to the reality of this sonship. We may accept it as a phrase, as so many words which please us, gratify our vanity, our ambition, and assuage our fears that, oh, what will happen to me after death and whatnot and whatnot. Oh, I shall be all right. You see, nothing of that sort. But because of this inner complete purification, the purification through the baptism by water as well as the baptism by fire, symbolic terms, of course, water and fire, purified that way, the me, the obstructive me, the limited I, has vanished altogether in mind and consciousness. And therefore, this person here is the living Son of God. Quite simple, quite straightforward. In a sense, taking away the mystery of it by understanding it and seeing it clearly glorifies the mystery. Remember the words of Jesus in St. John's Gospel? And now, it comes in chapter 17, I think. Now, O Father, glorify thou me with the glory I had with thee before the world was. And remember that wherever the scriptures in their deep teachings use the word world, its first meaning is your own living organism. This is my world, my body, my psychophysical organism. That is the world. Before this psychophysical organism was, there was only totality as far as I am concerned. And that is the glory with which Jesus prays the Father to glorify him. And now, O Father, glorify me with the glory before the world was. So there are deep things involved in this. When this glorification takes place, this person, this living person, is a center of transcendent energy. We started with that idea. He's a center of transcendent energy, totally unobstructive to the divine creative process. And therefore, he is a religious being in the full and the complete sense of the word. Immediately, the mind of a mortal raises up questions. Sounds very airy-fairy, sounds very attractive and wonderful in an idealistic sort of fashion. But what do we see in the world? Violence, conflict, ill, misery, and all the rest of it. What relationship has what you are saying and considering together here? What relationship has it with the stark, horrible realities of life? The first thing to realize about the relationship of what we are considering with the horrible realities of life is the fact that these realities, which we quite rightly call horrible, are there simply because we have not come anywhere near the right relationship between ourselves and the totality. That is all. It is a complete and utter proof of my failure, your failure, the world's failure. I mean, the failure of all mankind. It is the complete proof of it. Then one will say, dear me, but this has been the case throughout history. What history we know from the beginning of time when man came on the globe. Yes, it has been so. But is that Is there therefore cause for complete and utter despair? Let's give it all up. All right, you and I can give it up. Will life give it up? Life preceded me and you. Life will continue after me and you. This invincible, this extraordinary power of life, which is transcendent in nature as compared with anything that we know of power and energy, you see, just goes on. It doesn't matter what happens as far as life is concerned. It just doesn't matter what happens to you and to me. Life's purposes are on the scale on which, at which life functions. And life functions in terms of totality, not in terms of just a few separate individual humans or creatures or trees or stones or planets or whatever it is. Life functions in terms of totality. It just goes on. But we are left free to be willing to consider, to examine, to look, and to discover, so that the truth finally just comes upon us and releases us from all our ignorance and our misery and our misfortune within ourselves, individually. This is important to bear in mind. If therefore we see the trends of life for mankind, then we have some sort of guideline for directing our attention and our energies. And these trends surely are first and foremost increasing sensitivity. Remember what I said? Mind is a receptive, responsive sensitivity. And all this growth, as we call it, is a case of psychological healing, and that which transcends the psyche, which we don't know, we know practically nothing of it, but it is there. There are the few who know about it, and those are the few who can actually direct and utilize these transcendent energies. So, increasing sensitivity. A functioning of that sensitivity in a more and more efficient manner through us specifically as living human beings. It functions in a different manner in the animals, in the trees, in the solar system as a system, and so forth. This is all the same thing, but functioning in a variety of ways. This increasing sensitivity, this growing sensitivity. And as the sensitivity grows, the inflow and outflow of transcendent energy into us and out from us becomes more and more harmonious and perfect. This is the great aspect of yoga. One of the very great aspects of yoga. The right utilization of power. And let me repeat for the 1,000th time, abjure all power or the pursuit of power until there is the harmony of wisdom and love. Otherwise, power is invariably misused, first and foremost, to our own hurt and to the hurt of all others around us. Increasing sensitivity, which will also spell increasing refinement. There is a process of refining going on in life. Look at the different creatures. Look at the whole of the animal world on this planet, for instance. We start from all sorts of lowly creatures, rough, uncouth creatures, and gradually they become more and more refined, more and more wonderful, until at last in man this extraordinary thing called the brain and mind has come into being, capable of conscious awareness of what's going on. Ask your pet dog or cat, ask your donkey or your horse, "Well, Neddy, what's the purpose of existence?" And poor Neddy will say, "Hee-haw." That's all he'll say. But in that, he has said the whole truth, but without his knowing it. Only you, the human, can know it. And know that he has spoken the truth. But he, poor Neddy, doesn't know he has spoken the truth. So you see, increasing refinement is manifest, together with increasing sensitivity. And a third great aspect, the power to respond in the right way. Right response means that one has completely liberated oneself from uncontrollable, helpless reaction. We human beings merely react. We are the creatures of our reflexes. That's all. We are like the animals there. That is our starting point. We've got an animal body. That is our starting point from which we have to learn and grow. Just as animals make certain sounds by means of which they can communicate certain fundamental things with their fellow animals, so when we start as babies, we also make certain fundamental sounds. Every parent knows what these fundamental sounds are. But out of that, look what happens. In the way of sounds, the way language comes into being, speech, and the extraordinary significance and power which language exercises in determining our daily life and the things of daily life. So you see, this process, which with the bulk of human beings functions in terms of mere reaction. One receives a letter which gives certain news and one immediately reacts to it. One doesn't respond to it. Because one undergoes training and discipline, as we call it, one learns to suppress and repress this, that and the other, because first and foremost, and in the last instance too, it will be harmful to me. So we are completely governed in all these things by our self-centeredness, by our self-orientedness. Therefore we never respond in the right way. We merely react. But there comes the stage when the sonship has been realized. Then father and son work together as a team in which there is no disharmony at all possible. And in that condition of the individual completely absorbs in his own psyche every stimulus, everything that comes to him, both from the outside world and which rises up in himself through his own bodily and psychical processes, completely absorbs it and maintains inner poise. And in that state of inner poise, complete calm, there is no reaction, helpless inevitable whatsoever. What happens then when the stimuli come to him from outside or rise up from within himself? This extraordinary thing called compassion. We all know the word. Most of us can spell it correctly. This extraordinary thing called compassion, this thing called love, this thing called wisdom, this thing called truth, beauty, goodness, that wells up from within. Mystery and marvel. All this which we ascribe to the transcendent, whom we postulate as God or Brahman or whatever you like, you see, is there within us, and it wells up at last. It is there from the beginning. Before the world was even, it was there. It is there, and now it is no longer crushed in by selfness, by ignorance, by fear, by ambition, by I-ness and my-ness. And when that happens, your response, that which goes out from you as the inevitable consequence of that which has come into you, that response is at last the perfect human response. God functions through man. The total reality functions through the individual, finite particular. The signature of immortality is written in terms of mortality, of eternity in terms of time, and of infinite poise and rest in terms of the action which is divine action through a human being. And this is one of the deep meanings of confessing Christ, of realizing Christ consciousness. As the Buddhist would put it, of realizing Buddha nature. As the Hindu would put it, of realizing the Atma, or becoming Brahman, and so on. And this approaching festival of Christmas. And we wish people will enjoy a merry Christmas. So what is the meaning of merriment in this context? The entire creative process is a process of infinite bliss and delight. But the bliss which utterly transcends all sensationalism, all excitement, which transcends a beginning and an ending, for the simple reason that there never was a seeking for something other than that eternal reality which is embodied in us. And therefore, there can be no disappointment, because there are no human limited hopes and such absurdities involved in it. So you see, this is the meaning of the merriment of Christmas. The merriment of the heavenly host. The heavenly host is right inside one. It's not anywhere else. You'll never have to spend a penny or a fraction of a penny on buying a ticket to heaven. Nothing will take you there. I mean, no vehicle, no external, no other person will take you to heaven, and so forth. Because heaven is right inside you, it is you. There is no there where heaven is concerned. There is no tomorrow or yesterday where heaven is concerned. It is the eternal here now, the transcendent here now. And you see, is not this the fulfillment, the coming to fruition of the religiousness which is within us, which characterizes us, in fact? This is what specifically characterizes us by contrast with all other animals, this religiousness within us, which comes to full consciousness. And when it has come to full consciousness and has become spontaneous and natural, then the sonship has been completely realized. And therefore, through that sonship realized within oneself, you go to the Father. And this is the me that Jesus refers to when he says, "No man cometh unto the Father but through me." Your state then is the state of free, full, and perfect creativeness. This is the transcendent meaning and depth of religion and of religious living.